Tribal by Imelda May. Oh my God, I so want to be in her band. Would she? I'm too old. I'm too old for her band. Never mind. She was extraordinary. Did you? I was doing my seat dancing with that one. Thank you, Tribal and Imelda May. Hello and good morning. This is Julie Mullen on The K Cole Show. That's right. You've tuned in to 102.5 FM. And I'm broadcasting, thank you very much, from home. In the cat litter room, it's pretty fragrant. Yeah, too much food last night, or probably too much information. So wherever you're listening, there's a very warm welcome here on the K-Kill Show. You could be anywhere in the world. You could be in Roma, or Paris, or Istanbul, or how about plain old Heswell, up north, or Petersfield. Or maybe you're in Brighton. Okay, so you got it. It's the K Cole Show. You've tuned in. At 9:20, we have, well, just pure gastro porn, really, in the form of a blonde bombshell. She uses saffron and cardamom like we basically put our socks on. So let's have a little bit of crazy. For her, this is for you, Jilly.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
This show would make you crazy, let's be honest. If you just tuned in, yeah, I'm Julie Mullen. This is the K Cole Show. And we've got a foodie coming on. Oh my God. She is queen of the podcasts. Queen of everything, really. Going to her website was like getting on a jewellery box. It was like, just delicious, really. And there's a fabulous picture. Well, there's lots of pictures of many people, but Nigella Lawson springs out. I'm a giant fan of Nigella. So Jilly Smith today at 9:20. She's food writer and podcaster. But if you go on jillysmith.com, you'll see that she's kind of, well, she's a colossus, really. She's into everything. And we shall make contact with her via Messenger. But let's pump it up because we've got to keep it pumped, don't we? So this is going out to Jilly and her family. They're all for Jilly. Oh my God, what's going on? This is for her husband.
fresh. Your girl admits that we the shit. F-R-E-S-H, we fresh. G-E-F, that's right, we dip. We definite. B-E-P, we reppin' it. So, turn me up. Turn me up. Turn me up. Come on, baby.
Black Eyed Peas trying to give us indigestion. But actually, a cake has just arrived, and for all our regular fabulous listeners in the Totnes and Dartington area, hello and welcome to you. And Colin Large is still about. People are sending us emails right, left and centre saying, what's happened to Colin Large? Is he still making cakes? Because one of the last comments I made is he was having a rest. Well, indeed, he is the most fabulous cake maker, and this morning he has made us a Trojan cake. He's a little bit of a crazy lad of Totnes. His mother was also a chef and a cookbook lady, stuck to the rules, but you see, Colin is one of those fellas that just breaks all the rules in cookery, and I do love that. Now, Jilly has a great podcast, which I'm going to give you a little squirt of. Come on, just a little soupçon. Come on,
Jilly. Hello and welcome back to Cooking the Books, the podcast which looks at the stories behind the pages of the best new food books on the shelves. It's about linking the thinking about what we eat and who we are to create a deeper connection with food. And this week we're with the queen of street food, Grace Regan, whose Spicebox plant-based curry house, and now book, is the result of an extraordinary journey from Silicon Valley to Walthamstow via off-road India. She's a powerhouse of a businesswoman, a young British foodie finalist, a Red Magazine Woman of the Year, and she's still only just 30.
I was on a what's called a startup accelerator. So, you know, there are like 50 companies around me, all with these ideas. We've all got investment. We're all trying to grow our companies. And I'm just thinking, does the world need, you know, another Airbnb for something or an Uber for something? It's just like, feels like people were creating problems that didn't exist to solve them.
I asked her to conjure up the early morning setup of the Spicebox street food stall.
The first thing to say is that I would have spent the morning, you know, unloading my van, setting up the gazebo, building a kitchen in a gazebo from scratch, getting the barbecue lit, the food heated up, briefing my team on the day, and then around 11, 11.30, the first kind of hungry customers turn up, and you start serving them. And then suddenly the rush comes and you've got a really long queue and you're trying to get the food out as quickly as humanly possible, whilst also like taking that time to engage with your customers, talk to them. There'll be regulars there. Giving everyone the best experience possible. And then suddenly, before you know it, everyone's back at their desk. It's quiet and it's time to pack down, which is always the worst part of the day. You often have to, you know, there's one water point for all the traders. You have to fill up your washing up bucket. I often used to do the washing up. I'd sit at the back of the stool washing up in freezing cold water while the team kind of packed the kitchen and the gazebo away. Then it goes into the van and you're done for the day.
But it is exactly as you say, isn't it? It's that like high pressure, high intensity, and all the other stall holders around you are doing the same thing. It's like, that is that where the buzz comes from? Why is it such an exciting thing for the customers and the stall holders?
I think it is that like camaraderie between traders is really special. I cannot explain how helpful the other traders were in the early days. I learned like everything I knew from them, and they were so willing to share their knowledge. It's an interesting way of life, and it's, you know, I think it exists slightly outside the system, and everyone's got their own backstory to like what made them go into street food and do what they're doing. There's so much passion for it. If you didn't have passion, you couldn't do it because it's such a hard job. And I think that really feeds off into like the customers as well, and they can feel that. And then also I think for the customers, you know, if you've been, for example, we used to do a market like in Canary Wharf, and you know, these people would have been at their desk, some of them, since like 5 a.m. And their highlight of the day was coming out to kind of have a chat with us and eat our food.
It's a little bit like running away with the circus, isn't it?
Yes.
Ginny exactly Smith. That. Can't wait to interview her at 9:20. I like that quip, running away with the circus. Well, on that note, let's have a little bit of Elephant, the Seven Nation Army. To a queer kumquat, O mascarpone, my kumquat doth cream gingerly in your presence. 'Twas a sticky date with those pecan petals. It turned me a green gauge fool for you, my love. Your creme anglaise doth make even a coconut pound cake rise. You poach apricots, then dally with a fistful of pistachios. Come clean, don't just creme anglaise me. Creme fraiche me, almond tart me, and my passion fruit will surely plum jam, plum jam, plum jam. Trifle and prune is me. You will crystallize, then caramelize, and sear me with your quince apace. Henceforth, love, bring rose water to my fig quarter. There you go. I mashed it up. That was Seven Nation Army and the White Stripes. I like that vibe, that boom, 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 pump, pump. And then I did a To a Queer Kumquat, which is from Erotic Poetry for Vegans and Vegetarians, written by me. Oh, my God. I'm so brave, especially in the morning with that sort of gastro porn. So let us make some music for Gilly and some stamping feet and a horn. Let's get her on in a second. She's going to come on at 9:20. But meantime, let's have a Mac.
In the kitchen on my own.
She's in the kitchen.
Move to the cooking. I burn for you. Hoping one day you'll come home. Can't taste a lover on the throne. I dance in the kitchen on my own.
In the kitchen. Hey, Mac. Absolutely brilliant. We can't be late. She'll kill us. It's time to get Jilly on the line. But sorry, Mac, you have to go. I don't mean it in a bad way. They just quieten you a little bit. Whoa, let's get Jilly Smith. Hello.
Hello.
Hello and good morning, Jilly Smith. We're very excited to have you on the programme.
I'm loving the food theme. Bit fruity though there, Julie.
Well, it's a Totnes, my darling. Anything.
I expect nothing less.
Anything goes. Anything goes in Totnes. We have to keep it. Well, you mentioned gastro porn on your site, so I thought I better tune in with that. So now, you queen of queens, I absolutely love your website. You are like a jewellery box. I could just go in and find an heirloom from 1920s and then something right up to the minute and then all sorts of little things that you've retrieved off the beach. Who knows? You seem to be one of those people that can dream up practically anything. Jilly Smith, tell us. What about your... Well, let's start off with cooking the books because that is rather funky and fabulous. And is that your latest project?
It's my own. So, yeah. So it took me a long time of podcasting and doing stuff for other people before I thought, can I do it myself? Can I do my own podcast? You know, because podcasting is the kind of the classic punk DIY sort of platform, isn't it? Anybody can make a podcast, but yeah. I didn't do it that way. I went into work for Delicious Magazine. I made a pioneering food podcast for them, you know, did all the awards and all that sort of stuff, you know, prestige, prestige, prestige. And you know, with it came its little black book. So I was interviewing absolutely every food A-lister.
Wow.
And, yeah. You know, and then, of course, you know, started the Instagram thing to go with it. So it looked like, you know, I was, you know, absolutely rocking it. And then 4 years on, and I did lots of other podcasts for lots of people, you know, Compassion and World Farming. I produced Philip Limbury's podcast. I did Leon's How to Eat to Save the Planet. Wow. I did Borough Market. So I was doing lots of things for other people, which was great. And I loved it. And then when the Delicious podcast finished in January last year, I thought, oh, God, can I do one by myself? You know, who am I without all this, you know, big suit, big power suit stuff on? And so I thought, OK, I'm going to try. So I sent out an email to one of the big food PRs asking for some of her top names, you know, the Ottolenghi crew. And sat back and nothing came back. Well, I thought, oh no, that's it. You see, take off the suit and I'm no one. It was just Emperor's New Clothes. You know, who am I without all that lovely glittery gold around me? And then she got back to me about 2 weeks later and she said, Melissa Hemsley's been in touch. She's got a new book out, and she says she'd love to be on your show.
Wow.
Because she saw a piece, one of your posts on Instagram, saying that you'd given up flying. And she was really impressed with that because she wants to do that, but didn't feel that she could. And she saw that your husband was going on this round the world or around America, you know, life-changing trip. Mm. And you were supposed to go with him and you stuck to your principles and didn't go. So she wants to know you. And I was like, What? So, of course, once you get Melissa Hemsley on your show, the door's open. And we got on like a house on fire and we did talk about it. And as a result of that, you know, really, I've had absolutely everybody on my show. And now I literally can ask for any food A-lister. Mm. And you know, I'll very probably get them, which is amazing. And that, of course, you know, in the silly, mad world of social media, that means something. But for me, because that podcast is really kind of bringing up together all my food activism and all my beliefs and my philosophies, it really matters because those people have clout. And it means that I can get my message out there to a really big audience.
It's absolutely brilliant, but you deserve it as well, because you put all that work in and you did all that kind of, you know, fabulous flashy suit business and out in working for other people. And then to launch something on your own is really brave. But I think after putting all that other work in, the doors should be flying open.
Yeah, but and you know, it doesn't work that way.
I know.
You know, it doesn't work that way always. And, you know, it did take that little bit of luck and a bit of chutzpah just to make it work. It was mainly luck. I don't know what would have happened if Melissa hadn't asked, to be honest, really. Mm. It still works that way, which I hate, but, you know.
Yeah, but actually that door did fly open and I think it's because it was meant to be. So what does it all mean in terms of, you're the podcast queen. What does it mean in terms of pounds, shillings and pence? So before you were obviously earning a good living, doing what you were doing, and then you went off on your own. Can you kind of balance the books? Never mind cooking them. Are you balancing the books in terms of earnings?
Well, it's interesting because I've just written a book. Well, during lockdown, I wrote a book about podcasting.
Saw that on your site.
A successful podcast. Yeah. And it was given to me. You know, I was asked to write it by the publisher. I do podcasting retreats. I teach people how to do podcasts. And it's all women. And it's all about being heard. And we have fantastic times kind of getting together, what we did before COVID, at my house in East Sussex.
Yeah.
You know, really drilling down. What do you want to say? What conversations do you want to start? And, you know, who do you want to be part of? What kind of community do you want to be part of? That you can do with a podcast. And one of the people on the course was a bit distracted. And she said, oh, sorry, I'm really sorry, but I'm just signing a book deal. Mm-hmm. It's my first book deal. And we got chatting about it. And she said, you know what? They're looking for someone to write a book about podcasting. Shall I suggest you? All right, then. And anyway, I signed the deal within a week. And I've written a lot of books, but it's never, ever taken that little amount of time. But it was given this awful name, first of all. Sorry, publishers, but, you know.
Yeah.
It was called How to Start and Grow a Successful Podcast.
Mm.
So I started writing during lockdown, and I thought, well, what does success mean to me? Does it mean money? No, because there are other ways of making money. Does it mean getting in what you want to say into the right circles? Does it mean having an impact? You know, there's lots of things that success means. Mm. So I spent the first lockdown, asking all the big podcasters and small podcasters what success meant to them. And during that course, I worked out what it means to me. So for me, it is about getting a book, for example. You know,
yeah.
So bottom line is podcasting as such doesn't pay unless you get sponsorship. And I did go that route at first, but it was a pain, to be honest. I was chasing sponsors all the time rather than doing what I wanted to do.
Mm.
I was having to get them to sign off my copy. You know, this is the punky DIY thing, and I'm getting them to have to sign off my copy. So I'm looking for good sponsorship. I'm looking for the right sponsorship, and that I'm prepared to wait for. But in the meantime, a podcast is a fantastic calling card. So I got a book commissioned out of it. I can do all my podcasting retreats on the back of the book. That will grow. My podcasting coaching has grown massively. I am the podcast queen. You know, I have a voice. I can talk to a lot of people who are incredibly influential about what I believe in. And get them to kind of hoik onto my, so Ottolenghi, for example, you know, I can talk about how to eat to save the planet with Ottolenghi and with, you know, huge, huge names. And of course he's thinking that way, but he doesn't necessarily frame it that way.
Yeah.
So I can have him having that conversation about how to eat to save the planet on my podcast and spread it out into my community in a way that I haven't seen him do before.
So that's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's what success means to me. Will I earn money from it? I have earned money from it because I've written a book and, you know, that pays and, you know, podcasting, coaching and stuff. Do I earn money from the podcast itself? No, but only because I've turned down the sponsorship until I find the right thing. Mm. I'm doing Cooking the Books, the retreats in from the autumn. So people will come and stay at my house in East Sussex and retreat with me and the author. So we will have a totally immersive experience with their favourite author.
Wow.
That'll pay. So I think that, you know, it's like you build a foundation and you don't necessarily have to monetize that bit because there are things, there are offshoots off that that will make it worth it for you. But making it worth it, again, is layered. Mm. You know, I do all sorts of different things to pay the mortgage. Mm-hmm. We have yoga retreats at our house, for example. It's fantastically successful at that, post-COVID and pre-COVID. But, you know, that helps to pay the mortgage. So, it, you know, at my age, I don't want a job. I never have had a job. I want to make it up myself. I want to do the things that I love that makes it worth, you know, just I want to meet amazing people. I want to have an impact. I want to talk about things I really want to talk about. And if that means that I have to be more inventive with my income revenue, then so be it.
Mm. Ooh. It feels like as you're talking, I feel all these sparks coming off you. But then let's be honest, I did meet you at Buddha on the Bicycle that fairy tale morning in Covent Garden when you were looking for a necklace and I was helping my friends out working at Buddha. I have to say, so many people that I met in Buddha at Buddha on the Bicycle, I bumped into Miel de Botton, who then became my poetry patron.
Oh, wow.
And actually, seriously, and then I met you and lots of other people. I had these strange, it was like Covent Garden, and it was a healing hub, that shop, obviously, Buddha on a Bicycle. So it was all meant to be. But as you were talking about all your endeavours and the way your brain works, your heart works, your community spirit, things that really kind of rock you and move you forward, I really got the feeling that, yeah, Jilly Smith, like the seven wonders of the world.
Isn't that interesting? Because that was a long time ago, and I don't think I felt that about myself then. I think I was still working part-time at the university, focused on kids. And you know, very often people, you know, I mean, you read people's vibe fantastically well, and I think I do too. So we had a heart meeting, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
But I wasn't in that space, but you saw something in me that I hadn't even seen in myself at that time.
But actually fast forward it and you know, just everything that you have spoken about thus far this morning is kind of, it gives you little shockwaves because it's so easy to go, oh, yes, I made a podcast and then I got sponsorship. I hate the sponsors. And then I got sponsorship and I got this money. I hate the money from the sponsor. Yeah. But, you know, actually what you're saying is, you know, keep the faith, develop this. Don't get hung up on the money aspect of it because you've got It'll all come. These other strands. And oh my God, I've got to talk to you about Nigella Lawson because one day I came home. My sister is crazy about it. I think she's brilliant too. My sister bought Martin a cookbook. I came home and Martin said, this is from the kitchen, by the way, I think I'm in love. And I'm like, what? He said, yes, I think I'm in love with Nigella Lawson. I was like, what? But actually, of course, she's beautiful and she's a fantastic cook. What was it like to, well, she was on your podcast, wasn't she? What was it like to be with her?
Well, it was very funny, actually, because, so I wrote her biography years back, 2005, unauthorized, I might add. But, you know, I asked her permission. She said no. The publisher said, well, you know, let's just do it anyway. And it felt kind of a bit weird to do that. But it was the first time I'd done it. I did it again with Jamie Oliver about a year later. And, you know, I was thinking, well, as a journalist, because I've been a journalist for 30 years, you know, you don't ask people's permission to write about them. No. And if you've got something interesting to say, you know, do it. So anyway, that was my first biography. I think the Jamie one is a lot better. But anyway, so I'd had this thing, and I know that, so, you know, the way the work, it works with biographies is you ring lots of their friends, their people they work with, and they then ring Nigella and say, can I talk to her? And she goes, yeah, go on. And so you get all these interviews. So I had hundreds of interviews for the book. So I knew that she was kind of sanctioning it. But I'd never actually met her. In fact, the only time I was supposed to meet her was on 7-7. And I was heading off to the train station. My husband was ringing me and saying, don't go to London. And I was like, no, it'll be fine, it'll be fine. He was saying, the Home Secretary is on the radio saying, don't go to London. I was like, all right, okay, fine. So I didn't go to meet Nigella in London. Anyway, so fast forward to when I was at the Delicious podcast, and my editor says, we've got, Nigella's got a new book out. We've got an interview with her for you. And I was like, oh God, actually, I feel quite nervous about that. Mm. And I never feel nervous about interviewing people. Mm. Anyway, I was supposed to go to her publishers, and I had to sign an NDA, and there were all sorts of, you know, such a performance around it. And then we thought, okay, we can't do that. We have to do this. Can she come to the Delicious office? There'll have to be security. And oh my goodness. Anyway, long story short, she invited me round to her house. So I ended up going over to her house, was let in by one of her lovely people who she works with. And, you know, long journey from Brighton. I said, oh, can I just use the loo first? Went into her fabulously pink loo. came out, literally bumped into her as I was drying my hands. So not the most glamorous of starts to our relationship. But anyway, we had a lovely chat in her kitchen and spent most of the time looking at her cookbook. She's got walls and walls, specially designed bookshelves for her massive collection of books. Mm. And she was great. She was really great. And then I interviewed her again. And by that time, you know, during my university days, I really did focus it on going deeper about Nigella and Jamie. So I was an academic authority on the two of them. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a book that came out in September called Taste and the TV Chef, which was about the role of TV chefs in having an impact on the way that we eat and therefore who we are. And Nigella and Jamie, obviously huge in that. So by the time I had interviewed her the second time, I'd really kind of finished that book. And I asked her a lot of the questions that I really wanted to ask her from an academic point of view. And yeah, not quite so as interesting as I had hoped. I mean, of course, she speaks so beautifully. Mm. But it was really interesting that it was, again, for the Delicious podcast. It was a second interview. And she was not buying into. She was ripping apart the kind of shredding the kind of the appearance, the performative nature of it all, and saying, oh, you know what it's like, you know what telly does, you know what journalists do. And I really wanted her to kind of talk a little bit more deeply about what it felt like to become Nigellissima rather than Nigella Lawson, the shy journalist. You know, what was that about, the kind of the creation of this character by her and her husband, John Diamond. Mm. You know, it was very much sort of self-made. And that's what I loved about her, and that was I was arguing. But she didn't want to talk about it. She was very not buying into it.
She was diverting you, perhaps. She didn't.
She was. She wanted to talk about her book. And I found that really disappointing. Oh.
Now, we've only got two more minutes-ish left. And I really want to get to the nitty-gritty of you, Gilly, to find out, okay, if I was your guru, oblique magician, fairy, tooth fairy, what would I be manifesting for you? Because you have it, I've told everyone to go to your website, and I shall flag it up again, because there is so much, particularly obviously the vodka and tonic that you want everyone to buy you. You're going to be drunk by the end of the day.
Lovely. It's only Tuesday.
But seriously, if I could manifest absolutely everything, because you are into so much, I can see there's a lot of community based stuff, you know, the dream writers and all the retreats. And I've been to your house, actually. Yeah. It's gorgeous where you were doing the glamping and all that. And I can see why yoga would work there. What ultimately, because I feel that you, fantastic you're doing cooking the books. Because I really feel that you've been in the background too long, that you need to be the forefront of this as a voice, as a strong voice. Is that kind of, am I on the right? Am I sniffing the right?
That makes me feel very scared indeed. So journalists do not want to be in the forefront. Most journalists don't want to be in the forefront. What I love is holding the microphone. I've done a few of these, you know, interviews with which is lovely with you because, you know, I know you, but I've done a few of these podcasts recently where I'm the center of attention. It's not my place. What I want people to manifest for me and what I'm manifesting for myself is for all of this to come together at my house. I want to do more retreats where I am there, but I'm feeding people. I'm nourishing people. I'm opening the door to these amazing people. I mean, I've just spent the last week, 2 weeks just talking. I've got loads of conversations later this morning with people who do the most amazing transformative retreats. And they're coming to my house. They're bringing their tribe with them. I want that community to seep into the bones of my house. I want to cook for them. I want to meet them. I want them to know. I want it to be like a Charleston, you know, a community of art and love and heart and transformation and amazing, amazing space.
Well, on that note, Julie Smith, we have loved being with you, and there won't be any more gastro porn without you, but we'll do our best. But thank you so much for coming in on this show, and we love you, and all the best with all your endeavours. Okay,
thank you so much, Julie.
Loads of love. Bye
bye.
Absolutely fantastic. Oh my God, you have to go to her website. Right, let's have a bit of Fleetwood, shall we, to calm ourselves down. That was brilliant. Love talking to her.
I'm
I felt we needed a touch of Fleetwood Mac and the Seven Wonders after talking with the Fantasimondo, Jilly Smith. And do go on to Jilly Smith. That's Jilly with a G. Oftentimes you get it with a J. JillySmith.com. And something we didn't really touch on that much, but actually I wanted to mention, because I went along to her gaff in Sussex, and was it? I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure it was. The Dream Writers. So Dream Writers is a community of writers who support each other in producing the writing they've always wanted to do, using a technique called dream writing. And this is from her perspective, Jilly. I facilitate the sessions with my network of visiting authors, publishers, editors and agents, offering advice along the way. Think Weight Watchers with pens. I absolutely love that. But if you go on the site, you will see tons of stuff. Lovely picture of Jilly with Nigella Lawson and also the Naked Chef. All sorts of things about retreats and indeed the book, How to Start and Grow a Successful Podcast, which reminds me that if you've missed the interview with Jilly Smith or any of the other ones like John Hegley or Starling, the pop princess, or who else have we had on? Loads of people. Paul McGann. Oh, my God. Exterminate. Do you remember? I did my little audition for him. Anyway, whatever you fancy, go on to Podbean, which is in the US. That's the site. We'll give you the exact address. In fact, it is pumped out to you, isn't it? Of course it's pumped. Let's have a bit of ghost. We all need a ghost in the morning. Come on. Is dancing. I've heard from Tracy Gillis. She's dancing in a caravan. So this goes out to you, Tracy, and happy birthday. We'll have to see you when you get back from your caravan. We'll give you a COVID squeeze, and that means at a distance. And that was Jerry Cinnamon with Ghost. So I mentioned earlier in the week that I'm doing a poem a day with the Facebook group run by Simon Williams. it's going well, but we're running out of gas. So we started on the 1st of April, of course. Only fools start a poetry a day on April Fool's Day. And we've been going, and there are lots. There have been some amazing, oh my God, some of the poetry. Those, in fact, I have to say, I'm going to give them a clap. See, that's an authentic clap from the K-Curl show. To all the poets on Poem A Day on Facebook, held by the esteemed character Mr. Simon Williams. Keep on going. We're nearly there. I've written 27 poems. Other people have written more than that. I think it's time for... Well, actually, this is Martin's suggestion for today. He wants Stray Cats. Now, Tracy, are you dancing or what? Come on, girl. This is for your new shoes. Runaway Boys. Oh, we love that on 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio. You know what I mean. So this is the K-Curl show. I've just got the biggest slice of Trojan cake I've ever seen in my life. Now, do you believe in dreams? I do. So whatever Jilly Smith said this morning, and in the final moments of that interview, okay, let's all hold each other. I've got Jilly Smith right there between my scapula and my endorphins. I don't know what I'm talking about. But we are going to have, in special sort of honour of her dreams, a little bit of the Isle of Magic. This is for dreams, for all dreams, for your dreams, for my dreams, for Jilly Smith's dreams, for Jill's dreams, the children's dreams. All dreams, this is for you. Take your dreams. They're yours. I just want to say thank you to the fabulous Jilly Smith. Thank you so much for coming on. And if you're out there and fancy listening to a podcast today, it's called Cooking the Books, and it's with Jilly Smith. And it's all sorts of different delicious ones you can listen to. And indeed, if you want to look up Jilly, it's jillysmith.com. And that was a song called Kamakumba by Mop Mop, the Isle of Magic. So on that note, a magical note, have the best day wherever you may be, wherever your hat is hanging. We just want you to have the most incredible day. And indeed you will, because we're going out with Moby. Come on, Moby, love. He's got extreme ways, that Moby. You know that, don't you? No, don't trust Moby with your hand grenades. Or indeed your melons. Don't trust him with anything. The spoon from the kitchen. Your dancing ways. Don't trust him with your headaches. Don't trust him with your nuts. Don't trust him with your husband. Wife. Anyone, really. Have a great day.
For this, there's always room in life for this.